Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. With us this week, the Assembly Minority Leader, Republican William Barclay from the 120th District. Leader Barclay, I love it when you're on with me. You're a straight shooter. You show everyone out there that the party and the minority can sit down and have a conversation on public broadcasting and share your side of the story. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, because it matters. And if we're going to have civility in politics, you're a great example of it. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for that kind introduction, but I really appreciate you having me on your show. I always enjoy our conversation, and I do appreciate having the opportunity to share my thoughts on things, especially from a Republican perspective, because as you all know, we're in a very Democratic dominated state. So I really do appreciate it, David, having me on.
No question. And the State of the State address by the lead Democrat, Governor Kathy Hochul, was held this week. I know you were there and attended, and I know you have some thoughts about it. But before we get into sort of the substance, the issues, I wonder about the form, the format, how the show went, so to speak.
Well, I think that's an accurate description. It was sort of a show to begin with. I was sitting next to my counterpart in the state Senate, and he had to catch a 4:15 train. And he was worried. He said, when's the speech going to begin? Because we had, we had the marching band from Albany. We had gospel singers. We had three religious prayers. So it was really a show. So the question was, I think, on everybody's mind, when is the speech actually, substance of the speech, going to happen? I'm always a little disappointed. Cuomo started this. It was nice when Hochul brought it back to the assembly chambers. I like it when it's in the assembly chambers, namely because I have a good seat in those chambers. but I think it's sort of a gust body, and I think it feels right to have the State of the State there. So I always get a little disappointed that Cuomo did his in the convention center, which is about as sterile as a place you could have it. At least this was in the Ag, so it was a little bit more intimate than maybe the convention center, but it's not as good as the assembly chambers.
Well, let's be serious. We have many, many issues that need addressing in New York State, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. We want to talk about some of those issues driven by the governor's agenda. And I know that you have already commented, Will Barclay, minority leader of the assembly, that some of Hochul's ideas, she stole right from your conference. Now,
can you believe it?
No, I can believe it, because this wouldn't be the first time that a governor in power, or a president for that matter, hasn't taken some ideas from the opposing party, in this case the minority party, and used them for their own.
Yeah, I'm very happy about it. I've said many interviews I've done since the State of the State, I say I welcome the governor to the party. I mean, our conference has been talking about crime. Our conference has been talking about affordability for many years. I'm glad that she's finally seen the polls, heard from New Yorkers, and seen the light that these are issues that New Yorkers are concerned about and they want to address. So for the most part, I was pleased with the substance of her speech. But someone told me today you can't really be thanking arsonists for finally going to a fire station and try to fight the fire. She's part of the reason we're in this place, unfortunately, in this state. But again, I am pleased that at least she's recognizing that these are problems, and maybe we can work together in a bipartisan way to try to solve these problems.
Well, of course, it's a proposal, it's aspirational. We won't really know what's going to be there with specific proposals and money allocations till her budget comes out next week, will we?
Yeah, no, that's going to be a big thing. We've been spending crazily in the state, and that's not a sustainable thing. So it will be interesting to see what she proposes. And in the last 5 years, we've increased spending, as I've told you before, $60 billion. That's not sustainable. We have to be more realistic on our budgetary process and get it. And by having such a large budget, you get the money from somewhere. And unfortunately, we've done so much tax and spend in New York, it's made New York unaffordable, and And as a direct result of that, people are leaving the state. So you're right. She's going to have to hopefully sharpen her pencil and find places where we just don't have the rate of growth in spending that we have over the last number of years.
I'm speaking with Will Barkley, Assembly Minority Leader, about New York Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address this week. The governor, of course, referencing the subways, which there have been some high profile in the media violent crimes in the subways, and she acknowledged that. The other issues that have been separating her from the Republican Party have been bail reform. Now that she's sort of acknowledging these things, I'm wondering, despite the fact that she may have stolen, quote, some of your ideas, whether you will work with her on this. Can we see cooperation? Now, I know you're in the minority and you don't have a heck of a lot of power here, but, you know, are we going to see some? Because it seems like the same issues rear their head every single election cycle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, affordability, let's start with affordability, and then we can talk about crime, we can talk about housing or any of the other things she talked about. So affordability, I was pleased. I'm always happy when any elected official, Democrat or Republican, talks about tax cuts, because particularly here in New York, we're the highest tax citizens in the country. So she didn't give any forewarning of her middle class tax cuts. So that was a surprise. I was pleasantly surprised that she mentioned that. And I think she'll have the full support of our conference in doing that. The other affordability she talked about and talked about stealing our ideas was the child tax credit, which we've had a bill that been held in the Assembly for a number of years. Just last year, the Democratic majority has held our bill for that child tax credit. Interestingly, the governor's proposal is richer than our proposal. I forget how much I think she's up to $1,500 maybe as a $1,000 in a tax credit. And I think ours was $500. So we're happy that she's going that. We're happy to take an idea, maybe even improved on our ideas. But, you know, she's going to have to get that through the legislature. And hopefully now that she's proposing it, the Democratic majorities in both houses will take a better view of that.
Will, forgive me for interrupting. Did I hear her right? Didn't she say that it was up to almost $5,000 ultimately when you looked at all the benefits, including the ones you mentioned for families? Did I hear her correctly?
Right. That was her math. I mean, so she added school lunches.
And she asked, she said, do the math right here in the room with me.
Right. So, you know, the question I was asked yesterday, is that math correct? Is $5,000 going to make New York State more affordable? I guess I don't know, but I think it's a step in the right direction where we're, again, with a middle-class tax cut, we're not even taking the money. She's got this rebate where we're taking taxpayers' money and giving it back to them. I think that's sort of inefficient. But, again, anytime we give money back to the taxpayers, I'll support. So I think she's going to have, David, very strong bipartisan support for those proposals on affordability. Will it be enough? You know, it's taken us years, again, the situation we are in New York State. I mean, at least we're talking about it. I don't know if it's going to be enough necessarily just to get us out of it, but it's a step in the right direction.
Do you want to talk a minute about public safety?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, as you know, it's something we've been talking about till we're blue in the face because of the many policies that have been instituted in Albany. We think we have a crime problem in New York, and it's because of bail, it's because of raise the age, it's because of parole reform, et cetera, that we've gotten in ourselves in the situation. So, I'm again very pleased that she's recognized it. Interestingly enough, maybe was it a month ago, she was down riding the subway, claiming the subways were safe, and then tragically that woman got burned to death, I think, on the same day.
For those that aren't aware, allegedly the gentleman, an undocumented immigrant, set a woman on fire on the subway.
The same day that the governor was down there saying the subways are safe. So that was a little bit tone deaf, obviously, and it was a real tragedy. And what's going on in the subway is a real tragedy. And so I'm glad that she's recognizing it. And her ideas, you know, I think we can support. We want to get a little bit more detail, but certainly increasing law enforcement in the subway system seems to be a good start. That's something I think we could support. She's got an involuntary commitment policy that I guess would let you to commit, you know, people with mental illness. And I did appreciate what she said, that that's not really a punishment. It's more of compassionate, trying to get these people care. And we do have a mental health crisis in the state. So I look forward. I want to know a little bit more about what she's proposing there, but I think that's something ultimately that would be a step in the right direction.
You could definitely see lawsuits coming from that idea, can't you? I mean, this is a very controversial idea to commit somebody for mental health reasons.
Yeah, well, I hope it's not as controversial as it may sound, just because you're saying you're committing someone involuntarily. I guess that just right there raises some flags. But again, I get back to the point. You're not doing it in a manner to penalize a person. You're doing it in a manner to provide care to the person. And I think as long as that's recognized, and, you know, so these people often do need help. And I don't think that's necessarily, you know, a bad thing. So we'll see. Well, again, I guess everything's in the details, and we'll see how extreme what she's proposing it is. And then if the more extreme it is, and probably you're right, there will be lawsuits and probably more of an outcry. But I think if we look at it through the perspective of you really trying to get these people the help they need, then, you know, that doesn't seem so extreme. It seems actually commonsensical.
Well, speaking of common sense, I try to use common sense on this program when talking to various folks involved in New York State government and politics. The listeners don't always agree. In fact, we got a letter not so long ago, the last time you were on with me, Will Barclay, from David K. Johnston. Do you know that name?
David Johnston.
David K. Johnston. He is a Pulitzer Prize winner, an IRE Medal and George Polk Award winner, really well-known journalist. He lives out in the Rochester area. He is professor of practice at Rochester Institute of Technology, and he wrote to me about the show we did together. You want to hear what he said?
I'm sure it was all complimentary, but yes, let's hear what he has to say.
I'm concerned about misinformation from your latest guest, misinformation you let go unchallenged. And I will say that I have brought this up with you in the past, but we've done many programs together, Will, and I bring it up now because he's talking about crime. Since 1992, reported crime in our nation has fallen by half. A useful interactive set of tables made from the annual FBI crime data since 1960 is available here, and he gives the link. New York State publishes crime data sets at the county, regional, and statewide levels. These extensive tables show similar sharp declines in reported crime rates. In America, your odds of being murdered are roughly 1 in 15,000. But in New York City, the odds are significantly lower, 1 in about 21,000. Yet hardly anyone knows this. Surveys show, however, a generalized fear of crime that is out of proportion to crime reports and without regard to geographic area. He goes on to quote crime statistics by zip code, and when you look further into where it's happening, you can see where it's concentrated. Well, I'm sorry, but that's the letter I got from David K. Johnston. I hope you're happy, Mr. Johnston. Will, how do you plead?
Well, you can say, first of all, there are all sorts of statistics out there. I would readily agree with him. Crime probably isn't as big of a problem as it was, say, in the 70s. But I think you'd have to be blind to say there isn't a crime problem in New York State. I mean, in the lab, from I look at those statistics, I get them, my staff puts them together from like 2019 to 2023, you know, shootings in major urban areas doubled. And so look at shoplifting. It's out of control that they're closing shops and stores in New York City. Car thefts in Syracuse, my hometown, have, you know, quadrupled in recent years. So
yeah, and yet the city of Albany came out this week saying their crime was down from 2023 this year.
Well, maybe it might be a blip. Let's hope it is. I think that's a good thing. But they're saying crime as a whole. So there are certain crimes that probably are, just demographically, the country's changed, and probably there are some crimes that are not, you know, as high as they once were. But there's other crimes that have been going up, like the ones I mentioned. So, you know, devil's in the details with statistics. But putting aside, you know, whether the statistics are right or wrong, I think people feel that. They feel that. Walking down the streets in New York City, walking in the subway, they feel threatened and concerned for their public safety. And I think there's good reason for them to feel that way. So I think we can't just put our heads in the sand and say, oh, you know, I think no problem with crime. When you hear, you know, almost on a daily basis, some terrible tragedy happening in the subways, that needs to be addressed. And so, and I happen to think, and people obviously on the other side of the aisle differ, that a lot of the policies that we've instituted in Albany have exacerbated the problem. Now, you know, is any one sole policy, you know, result of all the crime? No, but it's a combination of things. We got to stop, you know, worrying about the criminal and start worrying about the victims. And obviously, it's the most important thing that we can do as our job as elected officials to make sure that our communities are safe. And that takes common sense policies, and it takes input from both prosecutors, judges, law enforcement, et cetera, that just hasn't, you know, we haven't taken their input bypassing a lot of these so-called reforms.
Yeah, and maybe part of this agenda is a good step toward reducing more some of that crime if you make things more affordable, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's take another issue, housing, which has been such a huge issue, not just in New York, but around the country. It's gotten so expensive to live. And so one of the ideas from the governor in the speech was to call for $100 million in state funding to support the construction of starter homes and down payment assistance for first-time home buyers. She's also called for a new law to prevent private equity firms from bidding on homes on the first 75 days they're on the market. That's a little bit more esoteric for many.
Including myself. I didn't know that was a big problem, but that was a surprise to me. I hadn't heard private equity. I don't even understand how that would work necessarily, but why is private equity buying houses and not, you know, leasing them or selling them? I don't understand what their economic benefit would just be to hold these houses. But I am curious to learn more about that issue as we go forward. So, sorry, I interrupted you, Dave.
No, not at all. You didn't. Yeah. I want to hear more from you on this issue, in fact, because, you know, rent, and we had years ago, the rent is too damn high party, but it's still the same thing. Again, these issues seem like they never go away. We need to get people into homes and in better situations where they can rent and live.
Well, no doubt. And housing, affordability of housing is certainly an issue. I don't always agree. I didn't think what she was proposing, other than the private equity thing, was too extreme. She's talking about $100 million for down payments. Maybe that's a reasonable thing. But ultimately, we at the state, through many, many, many regulations, have made it very expensive for anyone to do any housing projects. And, you know, I would like to see, let market forces be more involved in the thing, have a better balance between buyers and sellers, tenants and landlords. And I think if you did that, you're going to have the market. There's certainly the demand out there. You have to increase the supply. And because we put all these regulations in, it's very, you know, the supply has not been there. So I would like to see government take another look at some of the policies we've instituted that make it very difficult and very expensive to build, and look if we can make it less expensive, so, and then more people obviously can afford housing.
Well, and, you know, part of the housing cost is energy, obviously, and how can we make things more affordable? That issue, along with the climate issue. And, of course, there's a new law, the Climate Change Superfund Act. The law will raise $75 billion over 25 years from the oil and gas companies most responsible for the climate crisis. The money will help pay for climate adaptation and resilience projects across the state. But the likelihood of litigation around the law, new law, is very high. It's not only very high, it's already begun, because Vermont is the first state to have passed a similar law. It's not the same, and they've already been sued. And I spoke to Liz Krueger, the senator from the east side of Manhattan, who says, you know, they fully expect that this law will be challenged. But I also spoke to the comptroller. You know, he's the chief financial officer for the state, as you know, Will Barclay. And he assures me this is a money-making, New York State citizen-saving law.
How so? I don't see how that possibly could be. I see it as a money-making. You're taking money from the oil and gas company. So, but that money doesn't just appear out of thin air. They have to get the money from somewhere, and ultimately they're going to get it from the consumer, and that's New Yorkers. And anybody that fills their car up is going to be ultimately paying for, I think, what this is, a misguided priority of policy. So this is just one of the many, many so-called green environmental bills that we passed down here that ultimately, as I mentioned on the show, probably are unaffordable. Really, they're unworkable. And in the end, the cost-benefit of these laws, I just don't think it's there, because, as I've mentioned on the show 900 times, New York, if you look at our total emissions, it's only 0.4% of total global emissions. So why are we spending billions and billions of dollars to institute some of these so-called green policies?
Because the argument, I keep asking the other lawmakers your question. I keep asking them that.
Yeah.
And they say, because we're bigger than some countries, Will, because New York has to lead. We have to be the benchmark when it comes to climate. It's more about there are no borders. The climate is changing. And if you're looking at the wildfires in California right now as just mismanagement, you may be missing the larger picture.
Right. Well, even so, though, I think New Yorkers and taxpayers may question, you know, they want to be a leader in spending. If one thing we're spending, you know, a few million dollars on this to be it, we're talking billions and billions of dollars to institute these policies. And ultimately, you know, if they're not going to have a real impact on what they say they're trying to accomplish, doesn't that seem like that's sort of a bad priority to do? And I, you know, elected officials can demagogue and use rhetoric or whatever they want, but ultimately, as I said, someone's going to have to pay the bill at the end of the day, and it's going to be, you know, New York taxpayers, and they may have a different feel if they're, you know, to build a house costs $10,000 to $20,000 more because you're instituting some policies that ultimately aren't going to really have an impact on the environment. I think most taxpayers and voters in New York would you got to think twice about instituting that.
I hear you there, but I want to be a little devil's advocate. We had the mound of earth collapse on the railroad tracks, the Amtrak, not that long ago now. We have problems with buildings crumbling. We need bridge infrastructure. If, as we're seeing, the icebergs melting and the shoreline's going to come up in New York City, we need to have infrastructure that can withstand that. We're seeing 100-year storms every year or two. We're having a change that's impacting, and pragmatically, if we're not out in front of it, there's going to be a heck of a lot more money in damage that we're going to have to pay and rebuilding that we're going to have to do if we don't do that. And besides, forget about the politicians talking about this issue. 99% of the scientists have decided these are the goals we should meet.
Well, I'm not going to get into the with you about the merits, but the one of whether climate change man-made, how much effect it's having on our infrastructure, et cetera. I will say this, though. There is no doubt where I agree with you totally, David, is the fact that New York's infrastructure is crumbling. Our roads and bridges are yearly. They put out reports, and we always score, you know, D minus F on our infrastructure. So putting out why that's happening, it's because we haven't made the investments over the year. Now we're so far behind, and also because it's very expensive to do anything, any kind of infrastructure improvements in New York. So we have to look at, one, lowering those costs, but we have to, I 100% agree, and even though I'm not a tax and spend Democrat, I do agree that we do need to make these investments into infrastructure, and we got to do it in a thoughtful manner. We ought to have, you know, 5-10 year plan of how to get this transportation system, our infrastructure, our roads and bridges back
but
into shape. So
it's my understanding. Isn't that part of this bill? Isn't that part of the Superfund law? Is part of raising the infrastructure is part of it.
What they're doing is taking money from private companies that legally were selling oil and gas, taking it from them and to try to pay for this. And that's ultimately, that money doesn't come out of thin air. It's got to come from somewhere. It's going to end up coming from the consumer. And so that's, I just think that's, yeah, that you can't blame oil and gas. If that's the case, then why, you know, we all should be guilty of this, and it should be a shared burden. We can't just put the burden on oil and gas. I mean, we drive cars. Don't we all drive cars? We heat our homes, et cetera. So in my mind, it should be a shared burden. We can't just pick and choose and try to penalize because everybody sees it as a big, bad oil and gas company.
Well, so I would argue that I would only argue that everybody drives a car, but everybody doesn't have billions and billions of profits as a result of what's now hurting the earth.
Which they were doing in a complete legal manner. I think it's going to be litigated. I strongly think that it's not going to be sustained. You know, that policy is not going to hold up. But time will tell. We'll see.
Will Barclay is the minority leader and the Republican in the New York State Assembly, and he's a heck of a good man for coming on this program and facing the slings and arrows and questions that need to be asked, of course. Now, Will, we only got a couple of more minutes. And, you know, one of the things about politics, before you think it's always the same old people, is that there are new politicians that come in, and you have welcomed 6 new members in Albany. Talk a little bit about, you know, the changeover, the new folks who are coming in. Are you excited? Introduce us to a couple.
Yeah, without a doubt. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. We do have 6 new members in our conference. We have a new member from Long Island. The rest are from Central and Western New York. But I do think you're right, David. When you get new members, it sort of brings new energy and new perspective. And even though I've been around a long time, I think I've seen these issues. I think I know both sides of the issue. You do get sometimes in tunnel vision. So you get new people in. And one thing about the state legislature that I think, unfortunately, we're getting away from that, but it really is a citizen's legislature. So you get people with different viewpoints and experience. And I think that makes it better when it comes to passing laws. So, for instance, we have a person who owns a moving company, a small business. We have people that have background in law enforcement. We have a woman who was a former clerk, so she's got, you know, local government experience. So it's really a great, I think we have a good diverse conference with
from both sides of the state.
So it's been good, and we, as you know, we've increased our, although we didn't in this past election, we've been increasing our numbers from New York City in our conference too. So that's been, I think, very positive. That gives us a different perspective for me, particularly being a guy from a small town in upstate New York. So it's always good, and it's exciting times, and I start 2025 very optimistic, and I look forward to working with all my colleagues, Democrat and Republicans, because we have to ultimately change the way things are going in this state. And I think we all love this state. We love the constituents we work for. And I think if we can just try to take politics out of it a little bit and just look at things really from a public policy perspective, I think we'll have some success.
Will Barkley, are you planning on going to the presidential inauguration?
I am going.
Who will be with you?
My wife didn't want to go, so I'm traveling alone, unfortunately. But we'll see. I don't really know who's going down from New York. I'm not sure who's going. I'm sure, obviously, the state chairman, party chairman will be there. I think I could get my counterpart.
Hey, let's make a real capital connection right now. Hey, anybody out there going down to the inauguration that wants to go along with Will Barkley, just reach out to
me. You're welcome to come.
At WAMC. Will Barkley, I can't tell you how much I enjoy our conversations and how much I think it's a model of how we should all be talking to each other with decency and kindness, even if we don't agree on everything and we're willing to talk and face the hard questions. He is the Assembly Minority Leader, Republican, and I know because you're a good man. You'll be back. Appreciate it, Will.
Thank you, David. Always great talking to you.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.